Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 472. Science Faction, your weekly corona update. The numbers are as follows for today, August 9th, 2020. Infected worldwide, close to 20 million. Infected in the U.S., 5.1 million. Deaths worldwide, 731, almost 32,000. U.S., 165,000. As always, usual caveats to that. Many more people are sick than are being tested. Many people are dying and not being counted in those COVID numbers. So those numbers are both much larger than officially reported. Okay, some interesting articles pertaining to COVID came out this week. First one from Discover looks at how the differences in a child's immune system affects whether or not they get really sick. Now, we've talked a little bit about this before in previous articles. This was an interesting article because it talks about how the immune system differs from a child to an adult, not just specifics of what might be actually causing it, but the broader differences. So let's go over this. This is, again, very interesting. You can check out the article itself on Discover. But basically, when a fetus is inside a mother, its immune system needs to be suppressed because otherwise it's going to fight the mothers and the mother's going to fight it, etc., etc. So basically, when you're just born, you almost have no immune system. You've been relying on your mother's immune system to protect you the entire time you were in utero. You're born, you're very susceptible to illness. That's why we're very careful with newborns. But what it means is you have kind of two immune systems. One is the innate immune system, the one you're born with. So your body's already set to fight certain things from the moment you're born. And the other is the learned immune system. You know, you get a disease and then you get over it. Now you don't get it anymore. Well, babies have essentially zero learned immune system. And because of that, they have a bunch of what are called naive T cells. So T cells are part of your immune system, and they note infectious agents, you know, pathogens of some form, bacteria, viruses, fungi, etc. They essentially learn to bond to them and learn how to kill them. And then you keep them around in your bloodstream so that later if you get infected with the same thing, it can go and kill them very easily. Well, babies have essentially all naive T cells because none of those T cells have been specialized to a specific virus or bacteria or fungus or anything yet. But you make less and less of those as you get older. So a little baby filled with naive T cells, they're all naive T cells. A grown adult, by the time they're 40, is essentially producing no naive T cells. So what's the difference here? Well, those naive T cells are designed to fight novel infections. We adults are used to just getting a cold or something and not having a big deal because we already have an immune system that's built up for that cold our entire lives. Because we already have the T cells or similar enough T cells because we've encountered the thing before to fight it off later on. So we're not really used to fighting quote unquote novel or new, totally new infections. Whereas a baby's immune system is totally used to it. That's all it does. A baby's immune system has never seen any infection. All it can do is fight new infections. So it's A, used to fighting brand new novel infections it's never seen before. And it has a bunch of these naive T cells that can learn to fight this virus now, whereas it wouldn't be able to learn to fight that virus in that same baby if that baby grew up to be a 50-year-old man. It wouldn't have the naive T cells around anymore to still fight it. So same genetics, same everything, but the age is the issue. And that is what we see in the numbers. Age is the issue. Likely the fact that older people don't produce these naive T cells is going to be a huge reason as to why the infection is so much worse in older patients. Now, there are some other issues too. I think we talked before a few weeks ago about how a new study has shown that children tend to have less of those spike 2 proteins, which remember is the binding site for this particular virus. So without that spike 2, the virus can't get in your body. It looks like children have less of those spike 2 in their nose, which is the main infection point. So it also probably doesn't have as many things to bind to. So this, we're probably seeing a few effects compiled here, but it is interesting because it kind of gives you a window into how your immune system works. You essentially are born with nothing. Your immune system goes to boot camp. It learns stuff really quickly when you're a very young person, and then gets worse and worse at learning. It's kind of like your language ability until you're fucked by 40. Article number two, spit test. Very, very cool article came out of the Yale School of Medicine, and it looks like they have designed an effective spit test for COVID. Those of you guys who have had a COVID test, I have had two. I've had both the nasal and the throat one because of my health issues. And let me tell you, they are not pleasant. Those of you listeners who heard about some of my health issues earlier know that that was not the only long, hard thing they were sticking into an orifice in my body, and it was probably the least painful one, but it still was not pleasant. It is actually deterring a lot of people from getting the test. Plus, it takes a lot of resources because the chemicals and stuff that we need to then later process that swab are actually in short supply. But the Yale School of Medicine has designed a new spit test that seems to be quite effective. So this would just be spitting in a cup, which, how much easier is that? You don't have to have a medical professional perform the test for you. You don't need all the same chemicals. You don't need all the swabs. By the way, we're getting low on swabs too. Swabs were a problem. So you don't need the swabs. You don't need a medical professional. You could just send somebody a cup. They could spit in it, send you back. That takes away a bunch of the issues of contagion because you can't really do the nasal swab yourself. So you have to go someplace where there's likely to be other sick people. And at this point, you could mail it in or have somebody come pick it up or drop it off. And then very importantly, those chemicals that we need to store and extract viral DNA are just not needed for these spit tests. You can process the actual spit itself. The results were also promising in terms of its effectiveness. It looked like about 32 of the 34 samples that had tested positive in nose and throat swabs also tested positive for these, and about 30 of the 33 that tested negative also tested negative. So that's pretty close to as efficient as the current testing methods, and given how much easier and cheaper it would be, because I don't think I got to this point yet, but we think it'll be about $1.30 to $5 per test. Even if it was significantly worse in accuracy, you could run two tests very easy. I'll spit in a cup twice and I'll pay $10. You know, that's fine. So you could do both of those very easy, very quickly, much cheaper. Having a spit test will make a huge difference, especially in the third world, especially in places where you don't have the refrigeration and the medical expertise and the supplies to be doing, you know, the nasal swabs and the processing and all of that stuff. Something like a spit test will be very useful. But even here in the US, those of you guys have gone to get the test, you see how long it takes, you can see the lines, you can see the contagion possibilities, all of that goes out the window with a spit test. Very, very cool news out of Yale. Article number three is a really interesting, I would call it almost an op-ed, and on Live Science right now. You can go check it out. And this is about COVID-19's neurological symptoms. So this is done by a neurologist or a brain researcher, and they are looking at what are the effects of COVID on the brain, both short and long term. Now, we talked before about loss of smell. We just reported the other week that loss of smell happily might not be a neurological thing. It might actually be the chemicals that are supplying the olfactory bulbs in the brain are being interfered with, not the brain itself. But there are other neurological side effects that we have found, including things like chronic fatigue. There's some Guillain-Barré syndrome. And what is really interesting in this article, and I actually advise everyone to go out and read this firsthand, because this was written by a neurologist and it's really, really interesting. They talk about not only how COVID can actually possibly infect the brain and cause really bad outcomes in a very small minority of people, but that during certain illnesses, the brain itself starts producing chemicals differently. They have like immune cells that are just in your brain. Remember, you have a blood-brain barrier. While you're sick, they become activated and they just start nailing out inflammatory messages to the rest of the body, which affects how your neurons communicate, which is why you don't have to have COVID. You could have a bad cold or a flu or something, and you're not on your top game mentally, right? It's not like, oh yeah, I'm really sick, but I could still do calculus. No, you're fucked. Your brain doesn't work. You can't figure out your kids' names. You're yelling racial slurs in your sleep. And it has to do with the fact that your brain is literally not working right at that point. It's producing different chemicals to try and fight off an infection, and those chemicals interfere with the normal signaling pathways of the brain. Sometimes it's even the case that for certain types of cells, specifically the microglia, they can actually change shape in response to an infection in order to try and attack pathogens. But in doing that, they also take out a bunch of the neural connective tissues around them, including the stuff that's important for memory formation. And so literally your body's reaction to an invader in its brain can be to attack the brain itself. It's hitting it with mortars, not a sniper rifle, and anything that's nearby gets taken out as well. That can be really bad if we're talking about, you know, parts of the brain that are important and memories that are important. So this is a really interesting article, because up until now, I have been thinking and talking on this show about the neurological effects of COVID as if they are only there if the virus enters the brain. And we talked about how scary that was a couple months ago. And then we talked a few weeks ago about how excited I was that it looked like the loss of smell was not a direct brain infection and how great that would be if we weren't getting our brains infected. And now that I'm seeing this from a neurologist's perspective, and it's always great to admit when you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Again, I was wrong in this, and so it was great to be corrected here, that it doesn't actually have to infect the brain to affect the brain, even drastically. And that might be long-lasting effects that are around for years, especially when we're talking about neurological degeneration, because oftentimes what happens is if you had a neurological condition, it affects you when you're young and it impacts the brain, but the severity of the effects aren't seen until you're much older and the normal cognitive decline goes much quicker and much earlier. So That is another thing to be scared of, and one of those things I'm not so happy to be proven wrong on. All right, and then lastly, a very interesting article about interferon alpha. We've talked about interferons on this show as well before. For those of you guys who don't know, this is another part of your immune system. It does not do the same job as the helper T cells. In this case, this is one of the first lines of defense when you first get sick. As soon as you get sick, you don't even know what's going on. All of a sudden, interferon alpha floods to the area, and it basically alerts all the cells around it, hey, this motherfucker is trying something. Get inflamed, get pissed off, attack this guy. It's the Paul Revere of your immune system, so to speak. Or, as a more modern reference, it's the guy in the background of the video right before the fight yelling, "World Star!" What we're finding in really bad cases is that the interferon response, which usually in healthy people, it floods in the very, very beginning, gets everything excited around it, and then other things start taking over, helper T cells, cytokines, everything else comes in, and they start taking over, and interferons die down pretty quickly. Well, what we're seeing in really bad cases is people come to the hospital 10 days into an infection and they still have really high levels of interferon alpha, which they shouldn't. But again, you look at that and you go, wait a second, high level, shouldn't that be a good thing? It's helping to fight the infection. Well, no, it shouldn't this far in. And now that we are tracking it, we're realizing that A, having a high interferon alpha count 10 days into an infection is a very good sign about whether or not you are going to need to be put on a mechanical ventilator later on in your illness. And two, it actually starts out counterintuitively with a low interferon alpha response. So what we're seeing in these particular patients, especially a lot of the ones that get it really bad, is that the interferon response is actually toned down initially. And we think the virus itself is doing that. The virus is sneaking in and somehow keeping the interferon alpha from noticing it or toning down the interferon alpha's release in the immune system. Then what happens is the cytokines, which usually come next, go fucking crazy because there's no interferon alpha. So they go nuts and they totally go out of hand and they destroy a bunch of stuff around it, which is what we've known as the cytokine storm. This is what killed everybody in 1918. It wasn't necessarily the flu itself. It was your immune system's response to the flu. And this is what is killing some people now. It's our immune system's response during the cytokine storm. We now think the cytokine storm, which could be described as an overactive immune system, is basically that first part of the immune system whiffing, missing the ball somehow, and then the second part coming in and going way too hard and destroying the tissue around it. So what we need to do is balance it out and get that interferon alpha there in the first place. So we have to figure out what's stopping it. Is it the virus that's somehow hijacking the system? Is it hiding? What's going on that the interferon alpha in certain people is not doing its job? And if so, can we give them interferon alpha? And right now they are testing the use of interferon alpha alongside remdesivir in clinical settings to try and contain the infection in the early days. And this might be a big deal. This might see a drastic drop in death numbers if we can get it to people early enough and if it's an effective treatment or as effective as, you know, there might be bioavailability issues or something else. But if we can get interferon alpha into people who otherwise can't produce it, then maybe we can control that cytokine storm that seems to be following it, and with it, a lot of the deaths that we're seeing. It will be very, very interesting, but this type of research is always neat because, again, what we found is one of the problems. Not enough interferon A in the beginning. What does that lead to? Too much cytokines right afterwards, and then afterwards, too much interferon A, and we actually think the reason we're registering people at 10 days in that are going to be really sick with high levels of interferon A is actually their body's trying to catch up. So a bunch of cells that don't usually produce interferon A are doing it to try and get rid of the infection. And that is causing the problems. Too little, too late, maybe the wrong kind of interferon, maybe it's stressing other cells. We're not sure. But it seems like we have zeroed in on one of the effects that's causing a lot of the mortality in this particular illness. And anytime we can do that, we can start trying to address those effects and hopefully fix them. So I'm super excited about that particular article. And I think interferon treatment may be the next thing we see that, like remdesivir, starts drastically dropping the death numbers of infected people. All right, thank you so much for joining me for Science Faction 472, where you learned all about how a child's immune system is different from an adult's and why that makes sense with COVID. How Yale just developed a spit test for COVID that might change everything. How even if your brain isn't infected, a viral infection can cause memory loss and neurological symptoms. And how interferon alpha might be one of the keys to stopping the mortality among severe COVID cases. Thank you so much for joining me, and come back later this week for Science Faction 473.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.